RAC meeting tonight. Introduce myself. My name's David Black. I'm the chairman of the Southern RAC from St. George. Also like to introduce the other RAC members here, starting on my far left. Then we'll have those go through and do those introductions.
Dale Bagley from Marysville. I represent an elected official.
Rusty Aiken from Cedar City Agriculture.
Sam Carpenter from Kanab. I represent Sportsman.
Kevin Bunnell. I'm the regional supervisor for the Division of Wildlife out of Cedar City.
Mike Staley from Delta.
Cordell Pearson from Circleville, at large member.
Brian Johnson from Enoch. I represent the non-consumptive.
Mike Worthen from Cedar City. I represent the public at large.
I'm Claire Woodbury from here in Hurricane, about a mile down the road, and I represent the public at large. It took 9 years, but we finally got one here. My last one. Thanks for the present going away.
I'd also like to recognize Steve Dalton here with us tonight. He's on the Wildlife Board. Jake is normally here, but he has to be excused. So we appreciate Steve coming tonight. Most of you guys, I recognize your faces, and I'm sure you're familiar with the process, so we don't need to really explain that as far as questions and comment cards, but we'll follow that same protocol. The first action item is to approve the minutes and the agenda, and so I'll entertain a motion to do that.
I move we accept the minutes from the last meeting since I wasn't there. And the agenda for this meeting.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Okay, that's unanimous. As far as the Wildlife Board update, the Wildlife Board meeting was quite similar to the RAC meeting that we had at the Southern Region last time. We had a lot of the same players there, a lot of the same ranchers, cattlemen that showed up. The discussions were quite similar. It took a long time to go through that process. And so I'd like to go through the items. Let's see, the first one was a conservation and sportsman permit rule amendments. And those passed as presented. The big one was the bucks, bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime recommendations for 2015. Now, most of the units or the regions recommended that that they pass those recommendations as presented by the DWR, but it was in the southern region that we had all the comments and our recommendation and our motion that went forward to the board. And so on number six, it passed as presented with the following exceptions. On the Manti unit, they voted to increase the permits by 150. These are deer permits instead of 500 as recommended. On the Vernon unit, there was no increase from 2014. On the Beaver unit, there was no increase from 2014. With regard to buffalo, there were some recommendations to increase the number of tags for buffalo, and they voted to wait until after they do the count. So is that in August?
In July,
they actually fly that unit, and then they can adjust the permits based on the results of that count. And so they'll wait for that time for any modifications that will need to be made. And that's actually in accordance with the Buffalo plan.
Dave,
yes?
Probably do that in September. In September, we've usually done it because we don't always have the data analyzed in time to make it through the July RACs. So.
Okay. Thank you. One of the big things that was brought up was, you know, it looks like we're going into a drought this year, and hopefully that the rains that we've received and that we get more storms will help us. But I know that there are measures in place to address those conditions as we move forward, and that those will be looked at on a monthly basis to see if any modifications in permit numbers need to come before the right. The remainder of that presentation passed as presented. And then item number 7 was the antlerless permit recommendations. And again, this was another big one that had a lot of comments. And from the southern region, we made some motions to modify that. And that passed as presented with the following exceptions. They added 200 doe pronghorn tags on the Parker Mountain. They added 200 cow elk permits on the multi-unit, which was the Monroe Dutton Fish Lake and Boulder. And they voted to add 150 more cow elk tags over and above what they did last year on the Southwest Desert. And then the rest of that passed as presented. And then there was a mountain goat unit management plan, which passed as presented. And all the CWMU antlerless permit recommendations also passed as presented. Is there anything else you want to add to that, Kevin? Okay, we'll let you do the regional update.
Can we ask questions?
Sure.
Okay. I know I wasn't here to the meeting, but I did read the minutes, and I read that the RAC, Southern RAC, passed unanimously no increases in tags on the southern units and no more than 3 tags on the late muzzleload hunts on the Zion, Southwest Desert, and Pine Valley. And from what I just understood and what you just said, they passed all of that stuff but the beaver. The beaver is the only one.
That's not quite right. The motion from the southern region was to accept the wrecks except for no increases on the Vernon, the Manti, the Zion, and the beaver.
Right.
Okay. So it wasn't all the southern region units, it was just those units.
No, I just meant the southern units that we recommend.
Okay. And then to limit the number of tags on the Zion hunt to 3, and the board did not address the Zion plate hunt.
And they did not do any modifications to the Zion unit either, but they did the Vernon, Manti, and Beaver.
Was it brought to their attention that the unit concerned wanted only 3 of these late hunts?
Yes,
they were aware.
Yes, they were aware of that.
Steve.
I had a hard time getting through that meeting.
Okay.
All right.
So for our regional update, pretty busy time of year for everybody. Our aquatics folks for the next 2 weeks are going to be capturing perch out of Fish Lake and transferring those to Yuba. The more perch we can get out of Fish Lake, the more healthy that lake will be in the long run. They're hoping to move 40,000 perch over the course of the next 2 weeks, and there's lots of opportunity there if anybody wants to go up and get involved. It's a morning activity. It'll go from about 8 till noon to pull the nets and process the fish, and then they immediately put them on one of our hatchery trucks and ship them to Yuba on a daily basis. And so if you have an interest in that, let me know, and I can certainly make arrangements to get you an opportunity there. We're also in full swing on our aquatic invasive species efforts, primarily focused on Lake Powell, and then here at the Port of Entry. Any boats coming into Utah, coming through that port of entry, any watercraft have to stop and be inspected. working hard at Lake Powell. If you've been down there this spring, the lake is changing drastically on an annual basis, where we had 10 quagga mussels that you could see on the rocks last year. There's 1,000 this year. Places where there was 1,000 this last year, there's 100,000 this year. And we have live mussels that are attaching themselves to boats that are there for just 3 or 4 days. We found in a couple of instances this last week, we had two boats that were on the lake for 4 or 5 days and came off the lake with live mussels attached, which is a pretty scary. We've got all the ramps staffed with folks to inspect boats. We were having some logistic issues with the Park Service to get the decontamination units down there up and running, but we're working as frantically as we can to make that happen. And then in relation to that, our law enforcement folks will be conducting some administrative checkpoints along Highway 89. We'll be doing 4 of them between now and the end of June, inspecting boats that are leaving Lake Powell. There'll be 4 other administrative checkpoints coming out of the Bullfrog area, checking boats, and those will be law enforcement efforts and citations issued if needed to get the message across that this, it's a serious issue and can cause lots of damage and cost lots of money if those quagga mussels spread to other places in the state. Our habitat section, they're in the process of wrapping up their restoration projects from last fall and in the process of getting some guzzlers put in a couple different places around the region. Law enforcement, I mentioned, a lot of efforts with AIS right now and then working different places where people were fishing. In our wildlife section, just the next 6 weeks will be very busy for them as they wrap up settlements with all the landowners, depredation payments and whatnot. You know, and there's some things that we're doing this time of year that aren't popular with sportsmen, but they're necessary. We are doing some removals of animals on private property. We try very carefully to focus those on just resident animals that are on private property year round and really don't provide a benefit. But I know that's not very popular, but it's. What we're required to do by state law. Our prairie dog plan that came through a few months ago has been fully implemented now. It's gone through the 45-day comment period, and you know, everything seems to be going really smooth. Prairie dogs are a hot button issue, and I have no doubt that at some point things will unravel and we'll have to you know, regroup, but for right now, things are going really well. We're also in the midst of our spring range assessments between our wildlife section and habitat section. And then the turkey hunt has been really good this spring. If you haven't had a chance to get out, you should. With the light winters we've had the last couple of years, turkey populations have rebounded strongly in a lot of places, and there's a lot of opportunity for turkey hunting right now. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
On Paiute Reservoir, it's down about 50% right now. You just planted that. Is that going to be drained, you think, this year? Or what's the status on that?
I'm trying to remember if we have a conservation pool on Paiute. Vance, do you recall?
I don't think we do.
I don't think we do have a conservation pool on Paiute, so we're kind of at the mercy of the irrigation companies and what they want. I'll tell you, we didn't. We found out this spring with our gill nets, we didn't get as good a kill on the chubs at Paiute last year as we would have hoped for. There's an outside chance that if that gets really low, we may repeat that effort and see if we can reduce the chub population even more. That's probably, it's not likely, but it's a possibility if that lake gets drawn down really low again this year. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. So our first action item will be the waterfowl recommendations. And so we'll hear from Blair Stringham. And then you'll have two opportunities to come to the mic. One would be for questions only. And then if you do have comments, we'd ask you to fill out a comment card and bring those forward so we can address those. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tonight I'll be presenting the Margatory Game Board recommendations for the 2015-2016 season. And before I get into the recommendations, I want to go through and just give a few brief updates on some of the things going on in the Migratory Game Bird program. For the last several years, we've been working to revise our schedule that we work under with the Fish and Wildlife Service to do Migratory Game Bird recommendations. Typically, the way this works is we meet as flyways each year in July with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and we put forward proposals to them. If those are accepted, they usually do that in August. And at that point, states can go and select their season dates and bag limits. Once those are selected, they're published in the Federal Register, which usually happens around the September time frame, and then we're allowed to go forward with our hunts at that time. Because they're published in September, it puts us under a really tight time crunch to try to get those published in time for our hunts that fall. So we've been working with them the last few years to try to move those dates up quite a ways, so we have plenty of time to go through our proposal process, as well as our selection process, and have those published well in advance of our hunt dates. So the way we'll be doing those now is we'll meet as flyways each September and do recommendations for the following year. So this year we'll meet in September 2015 and do recommendations for September of 2016. Once those are accepted by the Fish and Wildlife Service, we'll go through and do our state selection process. So you'll be seeing those hunt dates in this December, which will be for the following hunting season. And once those are published in June, we'll be allowed to go forward with our hunts in that fall. So it should really simplify the way we're doing things and give us a lot more time to prepare for our upcoming hunts. So right now we'll be doing the 2015-16 hunt recommendations. Those are subject to change because they haven't gone through this process yet with the Fish and Wildlife Service, which we'll do in July. And so if those do change, we'll go with the maximum bag and season dates that are allowed by the Fish and Wildlife Service. And then I'll be back again in December to do the hunt recommendations for the 2016-17 season. Just giving an update on waterfowl hunters and harvest and the numbers across the state. Since about the mid-40s, we've been tracking waterfowl hunter numbers in Utah. And for the most part, those have trended really well with our waterfowl populations across North America. As populations have gone up, we usually see hunter numbers go up. Those really stayed fairly consistent until about the year 2000. That's when we saw our waterfowl hunters in Utah drop off quite a bit. We really haven't rebounded since that time, although we've seen waterfowl population continue to increase since that time. We don't really know for sure why it's happening, but it has given direction for our waterfowl program in the state to try to increase the number of waterfowl hunters as well as retain the numbers of the hunters that we do have. And we've been working on hunter workshops across the state to try to increase people's skills for waterfowl hunting. We've also worked to increase access across the state, both on our WMAs as well as through the walking access program. We've also increased our resources such as maps and online tutorials to try to help people better understand how to waterfowl hunt. So really, given the populations we have right now, it probably is one of the best times to hunt waterfowl in North America, and so we're working to get people out there and pursuing those birds that come through the state each year. Last increase we have is just for the duck stamp. This is the federal duck stamp that has been in place for quite a while, and it's really been a really successful program. 98 cents of each dollar that's raised goes directly towards habitat acquisition or easements. Since the implementation of this program, we've raised about $800 million through it and conserved about 6 million acres of waterfowl habitat. The last increase for this came in 1991. At that time, it was estimated that the cost to restore or purchase waterfowl habitat was about $306 per acre, and that's increased to today's value of about $1,100 per acre. And so for that reason, Congress did authorize the increase of the waterfowl stump to go from $15 to $25, and that will go into effect on July 1st. So hunters will be required to buy a duck stamp for $25 to hunt in 2015. All right, moving into some population data for waterfowl. We've seen duck populations continue to increase for quite a few years now. And this last year was the highest population count we've had on record. We had close to 50 million ducks. So ducks are doing really well all across North America. Canada goose numbers here in the Rocky Mountain region continue to do great as well. We've seen an increasing trend for those since about the 70s or so. So they're doing great. As well as tundra swans, they've continued to increase since the 60s as well. The majority of these nest up in Alaska and move through Utah in the fall. We should continue to see lots of swans moving through Utah. So for our hunt recommendations, they're based on what's happening with the mallard population in the western part of North America. Given that we've had such a large fall flight each year, we would anticipate having another 107-day season this year and a bag of seven. We do expect, we do have three species that have species-specific harvest strategies associated with them. Those are pintail, canvasback, and scop. And we'd anticipate having the same season length and bag limits for those species this year, given their population estimates from last year. So for the season dates for the upcoming waterfowl season, the general season will start on October 3rd and run until January 16th. If we do have an 86-day scop season, it'll run from October 3rd to the 27th and longer if allowed by the Fish and Wildlife Service. All their bag limits for coot, snipe, falconry are all the same from what we had last year. Season dates for dart geese, those are also the same as last year, the same zones is what we're recommending, and so no real changes for our dart goose hunts. For light geese, we are recommending one change that will affect the southern region. We are looking to extend our season dates to October 7th for light geese before we go into our first split. This will allow for birds that are starting to move north. We've seen them moving north earlier and earlier in each year. So this will allow hunters, primarily in the Delta area, to have an opportunity to hunt those birds before we really start seeing a large number of geese coming through. So we don't anticipate this having any effect on the Snow Goose Festival to happen there. Then it'll resume on March 1st through the 10th, which will be after the Snow Goose Festival. For the swan season, it'll be the same hunt area, same number of permits, and roughly the same dates as we've had in the past. Our youth day will be on September 19th, and we are recommending again for shooting times for all days to start half hour before sunrise, run until official sunset, so that would be no delayed opener that we've done in the past for the northern regions. The last change we have for migratory bird species is for band-tailed pigeon, and this is on a three-year rotational cycle, but this year we are required to adjust our dates somewhat and reduce the season from a 30-day season to a 14-day season, so that'll be our recommendation for this year for band-tailed pigeon. Lastly, just a few changes we're making to our rule. We need to update the name for common snipe to Wilson snipe. This is a change that happened quite a while ago, so we need to update our rule. We also went through and clarified the difference between our rest areas and our WMAs and our non-shooting areas. Most notably was Antelope Island Causeway, where we've had some issues in the past. We redefined those, as well as for the airport and the marina, and for our rest areas on our WMAs. Last change we're making in our rule is to update the blind recommendations in our WMA, and that's just a simple change that we need to make at Farrington Bay to readjust those boundaries. And those are all of our recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the RAC? Claire?
What is the reasoning behind the band-tailed pigeon drop-in season, shortening the season?
We've had some conflicting information over band-tailed pigeons, just on what their populations are doing. We don't collect any real rigorous population data, and so for that, there's been some concern as to what that population's doing. And so basically for concerns with the population, we decided to reduce the bag or the season dates by about 2 weeks, just to be on the safe side. So,
is that all the questions from the RAC?
Blair, how many band-tailed are harvested in Utah year? Any idea?
Yeah, we collect harvest data on band-tailed pigeons, but given their few number of people that are actually hunting them, it's hard to get an exact estimate. Usually it ranges between about 20 to 50 pigeons per year, so really very few people pursuing them.
Okay, do we have any questions from the public?
No
If you have a question, please come to the mic and state your name. Use this mic right here on the black box.
My name is Richard Rulo, and I just want to figure out why you guys changed the snow goose season during the fall.
This last year?
Yeah.
So we had a conflict with the Snow Goose Festival that occurs in Delta every year. We had that season starting on the same day that the Snow Goose Festival was starting.
No, during the fall, for this season coming up.
Oh, for this, so not for last. Okay. So we get very, very few snow geese moving through the state each year in the fall. I mean, we get just a handful of them that'll be harvested. And so to maximize hunter opportunity, we move those dates up a bit so that we'd capture when those geese move through, which is usually around the November time frame. But for the most part, all those geese are moving back through in the spring, and so we've tried to put our season dates as far into the spring as possible just to capture when we have the most snow geese here.
All right, and one more question on the scalp season. I know in the Federal Registry they offer us the 86 days straight, or you could split it. Is there any recommendation to split the season on that?
There isn't at this time. We see the majority of scalp show up usually around the first part of November or so. We do have quite a bit of harvest happening even into October. So because more harvest is happening at the first of the season than the end of the season, we've chosen just to begin it on opening day and run it till
86 days. The reason why I ask is down here we don't get them till Thanksgiving time.
Yeah.
When things start to freeze. And, you know, trying to tell my son in January you can't shoot them, you know, it makes it kind of...
Yeah.
Kind of hard, I meant.
Yeah, and we've looked at our harvest date, and we've got very few that are shot in January. And so for that reason, we've ran it as long as we possibly could, which should be till December 27th.
There's no way you guys could recommend a split for down here for us?
Or? We probably wouldn't look at doing that just because there's more scalp in the state in October than there are in January. And so if we did that, it would probably run into a lot more enforcement issues and things like that. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Good questions. Any additional questions? I don't have any comment cards for this item. Do we have comments from the rack? Okay, I'm ready to entertain a motion.
Okay. I move that we accept the motion as the recommendations as proposed for the migratory game bird seasons in the coming year.
Okay, we have a motion from Mike. Do we have a second on that motion? Okay, for Mike also. Two mics. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor? Unanimous? Okay, thank you. We'll move to item number 6, which is the Urban Deer Control R657-65 rule amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the Division. And this evening I'll be presenting changes to our current Urban Deer Control Rule, R657-65. Currently we have an Urban Deer Control Rule. It was established as a pilot program a couple of years ago in August of 2013. It was a pilot program with Bountiful and Highland Cities. And the purpose of this plan was to evaluate a two-year pilot program that enabled each city to design and implement a control plan for the lethal and or non-lethal removal of resident deer that are damaging private property or threatening public safety. This current rule will sunset on August 31st of this year, 2015. Why did we do this pilot program? We wanted to test the logistical and economic feasibility of controlling urban deer populations on a large-scale basis. We've got, currently in the state, we've got a large populations of urban deer that are causing a lot of problems. And also we wanted to determine the effectiveness and the cost of various deer control techniques in these urban settings in these cities. So with Highland City, there's kind of a contrast between Highland and Bountiful Cities. Highland City chose a plan to use certified volunteer archers to lethally remove the deer. The plan was designed and directed in almost entirely by the city. And then in 2013, 72 were removed by using these certified volunteer archers. They logged in 322 volunteer hours and donated about 5,500 pounds of meat as a result of that. In 2014, not quite as many deer were removed. They logged in 184 volunteer hours. And I did some calculations on this. And what it came out to is it averaged about 4.5 hours per deer. Is what it took to remove these. So, on the other hand, Bountiful City, they went through their public process, chose a non-lethal trap and remove program in cooperation with the division, and just kind of a to show you what the responsibilities of the city and the divisions were. Bountiful was responsible for providing, they provided two city employees, basically, during the whole trapping period. They were responsible for signing up the residents and identifying the trap locations. The residents all had to sign a waiver to allow us to come in and trap these deer off their properties. And they were also responsible for enforcing a no-feeding ordinance. The division was responsible for choosing the appropriate trap method, organizing volunteer efforts, and checking the traps and processing all the deer, and also transporting deer to an approved translocation site. The objectives of doing this with the city were we wanted to determine the effectiveness and cost of translocation of deer from the city. This is something we really hadn't done before. We wanted to look at the public perception pre and post removal to see if it was making any difference. And we wanted to assess the changes in deer vehicle collisions, which is a measure of number of deer removed from the city. So the results of that, in 2014, we only got to do that for a few weeks. It's hard to get a program like this up and running, but we relocated 36 deer, and those were taken to the Cedar Mountains out in the West Desert. 2014 and 15, the last winter, this last winter, we relocated 211 deer. We got... since it was an open winter, it was a little bit tough trapping, but the people who were working on it did very well with that. And it averaged about 10 to 15 volunteers a day per trap day, plus two DWR personnel. It's not that many were needed. It's just that's how many showed up. People really enjoyed doing it. It took about 3 hours a day to process the deer, and they averaged about 6 deer per trap day. And just as a comparison with Highland City, what I did is I didn't take all the 10 to 15. I just took the absolutely necessary personnel to process those deer. And I divided the hours, the people, and number of hours into that. And as a comparison, it came out to about 3.8 hours per deer. And that's not including the transportation to the release sites. So kind of the preliminary results of both these cities was that Both methods were definitely effective in removing deer from the cities. The non-lethal methods were absolutely more costly, time and labor intensive. The survival estimates with the non-lethal removal have not yet been determined. We're kind of in the first year of that project. We still have one more year to complete it, and the non-lethal is not always an option in some areas. So going to the current urban deer control rule, the purpose of that is to enable a city to design and administer a control plan for the lethal or non-lethal removal of year-round resident deer damaging private property or threatening public safety within the city. That's the purpose of the rule. The changes to the current rule we're proposing is we would like to make this available to the cities statewide with a population of greater than 1,000. The emphasis is on targeting resident year-round deer. We added that into the rule. We would require an annual report of the lethal removal activities from the cities that participate in this. And any city that the cities must petition the division to include any capture and relocation plans or non-lethal removal. And the division has sole discretion to authorize or prohibit such activities as part of the plan. We do have some safeguards in this, and it's a little bit redundant on some of these, but the division, the part that we will play on this is that we will specify the seasonal time period when the deer may be removed, or basically a season. The total number of deer that can be removed annually, and the number of deer by gender that may be removed. We're requiring an annual report on any lethal removal activities. And any capture and live removal has to be agreed upon and authorized by the division. The division or the city can terminate the plan within 7 days with advance written notice, and the city has to renew authorizations every 3 years and must go through the public review process. This is a pretty important thing that they go through a public review process because we don't want the cities doing something contrary to public opinion. So the process they would go through, if a city were to choose to do this, is that the city would have to meet certain requirements and obtain a COR or certificate of registration. The certificate of registration is just a document that's given by the division that would allow a city to design and implement a deer removal plan within their city limits. So they would obtain a COR, they design a plan. With public input following the guidelines and the sideboards they have within the COR and the rule. The city presents the plan for public comment, and the city implements the plan. They provide annual reports to the division, and they have to renew it if they choose to every 3 years, and it has to go through the public review process. With that, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the RAC? Mike?
Yeah, I've got a couple. What you said you did survey the public on Hunting End, this project. Do you have the results of that, the feelings of the public on Hunting End within city limits?
Well, Highland City did they had a public meeting, and Bountiful City did also, and the results of the meetings were just slightly above 50% for wanting the deer lethally removed. But Bountiful, their public opinion kept switching back and forth from yes and no, non-lethal, lethal removal, and we needed to do a project, and so we agreed to do a project with them on non-lethal removal because, like I said before, we needed to assess the costs of doing this within city limits because we had no idea. You know, we could make an estimate, but it's hard without really doing it. So,
and then when a city agrees to enter into this program for relocation, do they pay the costs, or is the DWR stuck with the costs?
It's probably going to be borne by both. It has to be by mutual agreement, and so it's going to be. It has to. That will be determined on whether the division has the manpower to do it and the resources to do it. Some of the costs that are associated with translocation is that we have to collar everything because of so there's an expense of putting some kind of a marking device so that if by some chance that they were did come up positive for chronic wasting disease, we'd be able to go retrieve that animal. So there's that cost. There's the cost of transportation. There's the cost of traps and personnel time. And so that's something that has to be worked out between the division and the city and make sure that both are willing participants on that. But the cost of the program basically is going to be borne of developing and implementing the program is going to be borne by the city, whether it's lethal or non-lethal. It's just how much the division can put into that. So.
Okay. Did you have any negative comments from the hunting sector, when the hunting project from the public?
With Highland City?
Yeah, regarding after everything was said and done, were there negative comments?
There were a couple, and it came from people that found out after the fact. They did it so discreetly that people didn't even know there was a hunt going on or they were killing these deer. So yeah, there's a few negative comments, but they chose not to participate in the public process. And so that would have been the time to state their objections to it. But they didn't know what was going on. They just found out after the fact. So.
Okay. Any further questions, Sam?
Are you collaring any of these deer, or are we doing anything so you can track or see if they come back? And what do you consider an appropriate site to release them?
The answer to the first question.
All of them are collared.
Yeah, all of them. All of the adult animals are collared. We don't collar any fawns. And all the adult animals are tested for chronic wasting disease using a rectal biopsy. So they're all collared to be able to track. We actually have a graduate student that's working on a project to look at survival on these. The two places they were put, we went through the process last fall with the deer, the statewide deer management plan, and identified translocation sites throughout the state, and we chose two of those sites that were approved through that process to take these deer. One was in Box Elder County, the other was in Duchesne County, south of Mighton, and so they were taken to those two places. And some of the criteria they used to do that was that had to be places that historically had good deer populations. They can't impact agriculture. They had currently had low or no deer populations, and so it was kind of a rigorous selection process. Yes.
Let me just add to that, Sam. We do have several places in the southern region that are approved to translocate deer, and we did bring some of the deer that were moved off of Antelope Island to the Dutton this last fall. Southwest Desert, there's several, I can't remember them off the top of my head, but they were presented when the deer plan came through last year, and there are several at least a handful in the southern region.
Okay, also, do we anticipate by moving these deer and killing them that this is going to end anytime soon? We've kind of encroached on a lot of, especially up north on the wintering area. This sounds like it's going to have to be kind of an ongoing thing.
I think you're right. It is going to have to be an ongoing thing because we've developed some deer have adapted to a fairly, from a deer standpoint, fairly harsh environment between dealing with cars and kids and people and gardens and noxious weeds and plants that could kill them. They've adapted very well, and so we've got some pretty healthy populations of deer. And so what we're trying to do is we know we'll never get rid of them out of the cities, but there might be some with for, to throw out a term, I guess, a social tolerance level to what people are willing to tolerate, but it's above that tolerance level right now. So.
Okay, and also I noticed you mentioned hours per deer. Is this like a dedicated hunter project that you're doing with these? And also on the meat, are you issuing tags and the people that take these deer can consume them, or is it all like a donated thing?
If the deer are donated, it's usually done through a donation. If the city donates them, they do them through their own program. Yes, the deer, by rule, all have to be tagged. We give them a tag, but what the dual rule does allow is for a single individual in, that's authorized by the city to take multiple deer instead of just being allowed one deer.
Okay, so no consumption for the people that are doing this?
They can do that if they want, but... for example, Highland City donated these deer, but if the hunters wanted to keep the deer, they charged them $50, and that was to pay for some of the costs of certifying the archers and the meat donation and everything. And a lot of the guys, those guys, did choose to pay the fee and do that. And so they could keep a few of the deer. So.
Okay, so you only track the hours for expense purposes, just so you have an idea what it's doing. It's not a dedicated hunter project or anything.
Well, it isn't a dedicated hunter project. However, a lot of dedicated hunters did fulfill some of their hours helping trap and translocate the deer.
On the live
trapping, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I have a question from Mike right here.
I had one question, and that was... why do you limit the number of animals that a city can remove during any year? It looks like to me, ideally, you'd remove them all. So I didn't understand why we had a limit on the number, bucks and does, or the number at all.
That's a really good question. It's because the division limit has limits on everything.
Well, yeah, but in a city, you want to get rid of them.
Right, that's correct. And so what we look at, and the reason that we wanted to put a limit on this is because there would be occasions where there's a mix of resident and migratory deer, so we want to be very, very careful on that. So.
Yeah, I understand. Okay.
Okay. Dale?
That was kind of my question. Is there some season dates so that you're not taking those migratory deer? It's just the resident deer only that are getting taken, or can they take them any time?
No, there will absolutely be season dates, and that will be the division's main input on this, is the season when they can take them, and what it would be left up to the regions, the biologists, to know when they're really targeting resident deer versus migratory deer that might be coming in and out.
So. So there'll be seasons, but they'll be specific to each city and each situation rather than just a set season that applies to everybody. It'll be kind of negotiated and worked out on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. Yeah, we don't. And it'll be, you know, for example, a lot of times it gets closer to the breeding season during the rut, and there might be bucks that come down because there's does in the city, and they might be, more than likely, they'd be prohibited from removal, lethal removal during those times. Because of that, we don't want to target the migratory deer.
Okay. Any further questions from the rack? No questions from the public? Okay, I do have one comment card. This is from Bryce with SFW. He didn't want to come up, but he did want to state his support for this item. Do we have any comments from the RAC? Okay, ready to entertain a motion. Okay, Claire?
I move that we accept the Urban Deer Control Rule R657-65 as presented.
Thank you. We have a motion from Claire. Do we have a second? Can we have a second from Rusty? Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor? Motion carries unanimous. Okay, our next item on the agenda is item number 7, which is the deer management plans, and this will be presented by Teresa Griffin.
Hello. All right, we will be reviewing the Southern Region Mule Deer Management Plans. So last November, through the RAC process, they presented the statewide mule deer plan. In December of last year, it was approved by the Wildlife Board. And that plan will provide direction for deer management over the next 5 years. Within that plan, it sets sideboards that all of the unit plans throughout the state have to stay within. And then the individual unit plans, we do those the year following the range trend assessment. So each region is on a different rotation, but that's why the southern region is going this year. So the goals of the statewide plan was to manage for healthy populations of animals, for a broad range of recreational activities, including hunting and viewing, maintain population levels, long-term capacity of the available habitat, and to improve and protect habitat. Population strategies. For monitoring, we look at the harvest, the sport harvest, our population size, classification. In these plans, we go through all of the limiting factors, including crop depredation, habitat, predation, highway mortality, disease, and illegal harvest. Habitat strategies that we look over is the monitoring that we do, the range trend studies. Again, those are on the five-year rotation for each region throughout the state. And then each year, the biologists go out into their districts and do spring range assessments, which are actually going on right now. Protection and maintenance. We try to minimize any impacts and mitigate for losses. And improvements, we of course do a lot of partnering with our federal agencies, with sportsmen's groups to improve habitat, water. Okay, so for the Southern Region Mule Deer Management Plans, over the last several months, we held 6 public meetings across the region. Things that we focused on during those meetings, the biggest issues, boundaries, that was mostly for the Fillmore unit, different management goals, objectives, strategies for the deer populations and their habitats. So through those public the meetings that we held, this is kind of the comments and feedback that we got from all of those who attended. So the major concern was increasing buck-to-doe ratios. Some units, they wanted to look at increasing the population. The Monroe and Boulder, they'd like to see older age class animals. Crowding or no additional permits was a pretty significant concern. Predation issues on the Monroe and the Ponsagon. And then the boundary issues focused there on the Fillmore unit. So in the southern region, sometimes we forget how huge it is. Within our region, we've got 12 general season units, one limited entry unit, which is the Fillmore Oak Creek, and then one premium limited entry unit, the Ponsagon. So I'll just go through each of these one by one. On the Southwest Desert, that's currently managed as for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does. Within the statewide plan, again, you've got 2 categories for general season units. You've got either a 15 to 17 or an 18 to 20. So this is currently managed and recommended to be at the highest buck-to-doe ratio for a general season unit. The past population objective was 3,200, but they're highlighted in the green. We're recommending it go back to the long-term population objective of 4,000. That was a temporary reduction about a decade ago. We currently estimate the population to be at 3,000, and we've done about 60,000 acres in habitat work and improvements On each of these units, I'll just show you a quick graph of what the population, the objective, the estimate, and the number of buck permits that we've been issuing. So we're increasing the population on the unit, and again, recommending that we increase the objective to 4,000. We're issuing about 750 permits. The current buck-to-doe ratio on this unit, it is typically high. We're currently at 27.9. That's our three-year average. So the Fillmore, which is kind of quirky, I'll show you a map here in a minute, but we've got the Fillmore Oak Creek limited entry portion, a general season, and then the Fillmore Pavant. Both general season are managed at 18 to 20, but that change in the blue, in the darker blue on the Fillmore Oak Creek, the limited entry, of course, is a 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does. We manage for 12,000 between the two units, and we're currently at about just a little over 10,000, and we've done 130,000 acres. That does include the Clay Springs fire that occurred a few years ago on the Oak Creek. So here's the population objective, our population estimate over the last decade, and down at the bottom we've got 450 permits on the Oak Creek and 1650 for the Pavant. Currently, the buck-to-doe ratio, the three-year average for the Oak Creek, is sitting at 22.5. And then for the Pavant, we're at right at about 20. And again, that's 18 to 20. Okay, so for the map of these three units, the limited entry unit, this has been a topic of debate for probably decades. Currently, it is the limited entry is Forest Service lands only, which makes it kind of difficult to manage for a quality limited entry unit because, of course, as soon as those deer jump across the boundary onto the private lands, then they are a general season animal. And then we've got the Oak Creek general season on the west side of I-15 and the Pavant on the east side of I-15. We are proposing to enlarge the limited entry area, so that will butt up right up against the freeway by Scipio, expand that boundary, take it a little further to the west and further south, and then we would combine the two general season units. So then on this, all we would have is the Oak Creek limited entry, which would be larger, and then we would actually sweep the rest and combine that, so the Oak Creek and the Pavant would be one. It would increase our ability to manage it as a quality limited entry unit. And Riley Peck, the biologist in the area, has already been talking to a lot of the private landowners over about the last year. And if this proposal goes through, we're committed to work with those landowners to form a landowners association similar to landowners associations on other limited entry units. Okay, so for the beaver unit, it's managed at an 18 to 20 buck-to-doe ratio. We are recommending we increase that population objective to 13,000. Over 238,000 acres of habitat work and improvements have been done. This just is the population growth. We're issuing 3,000 tags this year. And the buck-to-doe ratio, the three-year average, is 17.8. For the Monroe unit, it is currently a 15 to 17 buck-to-doe ratio. We are not recommending an increase at that time, although that is a concern. I'll hit on that. The population objective is 7,500. We're kind of the last few years bouncing back and forth right around that. And our permits are at 1,500. The buck-to-doe ratio for the unit is currently at 21.3. And that's the three-year average. So for the Monroe unit, having it as throughout the entire state, I believe there is 14 units that are at the 15 to 17, and I think there's 16 currently that are the 18 to 20 bucks per 100 dose. So it does allow for additional hunter opportunity on the unit. Monroe typically has quite a bit of harvest success. We have been seeing some use on some of the preferred browse species, so deer are starting to hit some of those, showing that, you know, maybe we are, our population is getting up there. We're not to the point where we're having any sort of damage, but we are seeing increased use. But we're probably reaching about carrying capacity. Talking to BYU, some of you that came to the open house there in Richfield, we had a graph that we talked quite a bit about. But we have noticed declining body condition on those deer for the last several years. And this last year, when we were capturing some of those deer for the study, the Monroe deer actually were in the worst body condition. They were even worse than the Panguitch, which has typically, those deer have typically been in very poor body condition, but Monroe are the worst in the state right now. And it may be to, there may be a lot of contributing factors, but it may be to some poor winter range issues. Production does remain high. But another thing to consider, there are some studies in Colorado that show, you know, as we do increase our buck-to-doe ratio, typically it's a little bit of a trade-off, especially when you're reaching carrying capacity. Typically, your fawn-to-doe ratio will go down just a little bit as you increase your buck-to-doe ratio. All right, for Mount Dutton, it is managed at an 18 to 20 buck-to-doe ratio. The population objective is 2,700. We're estimating the population at about 2,900, and 14,000 acres of habitat work has been done over the last while. This year, we're issuing 700 permits. Our three-year average buck-to-doe, we have about 19.5 bucks per 100 does. So for the plateau unit combines the three subunits, the Fish Lake, Thousand Lake, and the Boulder / Kaparowitz. So for all of those subunits, the current population is the objective, excuse me, is 26,000. And we're probably at about 17.5 as our estimated population. And on the Thousand Lake, we're issuing 200 permits. The Fish Lake, 1,300. And the Boulder, we're issuing 2,200 permits. The Fish Lake, our three-year average buck-to-doe ratio is 18.6. For the Thousand Lake, our three-year average is 23.4 bucks per 100 does. And for the Boulder, we're at 20.3 bucks per 100 does. So on the Boulder, we are making a recommendation to increase that. As you see, they're highlighted in the different color blue. So that is one of the units of 15 to 17 that we are recommending be increased to an 18 to 20 buck per 100 dose. For the Panguitch Lake, it is currently 15 to 17 buck per 100 doe unit. We are recommending that that go to an 18 to 20. The population objective is at 8,500, and we are recommending that be increased to 10,000. The population is currently at about 11,700, and we've done about 35,000 acres in habitat improvements. This year, we'll be issuing 3,200 permits. And our three-year buck-to-doe average is at 19.3. Typically, of course, the Panguitch Lake is a unit that we have been working on the west side of the unit to decrease the deer population where we've seen some significant range damage. The winter range along that west side where it butts up against I-15, the winter range is quite limited. But we still feel like we've got a lot of room to grow on other portions of the unit. The east side, we have a lot of habitat that we can still sustain a lot of deer, so that's why we've recommended an increase. For the Zion unit, it is currently an 18 to 20. We are recommending that population be increased to 15,500, and the population estimate is currently 15,000. We've done about 8,000 acres of habitat work. The population has trended up for the last decade. We're issuing 3,200 permits on the unit this year. The Zion, we have seen a little bit of heavy habitat use over on the East Zion area, but again, we do have a lot of room to grow. And we currently, the 3-year buck to doe ratio is 23.9. For the Pine Valley, it's currently managed on an 18 to 20 buck to doe ratio. This is one of the units that we're just returning to the long-term carrying the long-term population objective. So we're going from 12,800 back up to the 16,000. So that's just returning to the old objective. Our current population estimate is at 13,500, and we've done a little over 40,000 acres in habitat work. This year we'll be issuing 3,900 permits. And the 3-year average buck to doe ratio is 21.5. For the Ponsagant, it is premium limited entry unit, which is managed for 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does. This also is one of the units that was decreased to 5,200, and we are recommending that as long as we're not seeing heavy habitat damage, we will manage for 6,500 deer, and we estimate the population to be about 5,200. We've done about 65,000 acres in habitat improvements. The Ponsagant, talking to the comments that we got from the public, one of the biggest concern is do more predator control, and that's specifically focused on cougars. There's concern to focus more on deer management and address the concerns of the growing elk herd. They'd like to investigate change the timing of the rifle hunt, or look at adding a second rifle hunt and increase management permits. And then bouncing back to a few of our units that have issues with crowding, the Panguitch Lake, Monroe, was there the Boulder? The Panguitch and the Monroe. We also put in the plan that we are looking into adjusting the percentage. Right now, we've got the split defined in the statewide plan. 20% of the tags go to archery, 20% to muzzleloader, and 60% to rifle. But for these units that have pretty serious crowding issues, we are looking into adjusting those ratios to see if we can shift a little bit more of the pressure into the other hunts so the rifle hunt is not as crowded. So here is just the table. It shows all of the changes highlighted. Again, in the green, those are the three units that will be returning. We'd like to have those go to their former population objective. Increases in population on the other four units. And it's kind of a shift with the Oak Creek boundary enlarging. We just changed that from 2,000 up to 2,500. Increases on the Beaver unit, Panguitch Lake, Zion, and then the changes On the buck to doe ratios, we recommend on the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz and the Panguitch Lake. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Teresa. Do you have questions from the RAC? Yes. Sam, you ready?
First off, I really like the fact that you've increased some of these not carrying capacities, but our population objectives. I've been this Ponsagon one, and it's not in this package because it's my last chance to hit on you about getting that population on the Ponsagon back where it belongs. That also triggers another question, and that's that the door-to-bond ratio on that unit has consistently been below 70%. Are we going to initiate a predator management plan over there and kill some coyotes and increase some cougar hunting over there? Is that in the plan at all? Or?
And the Ponsagon is currently on a predator management plan. We have contractors working on the unit to address coyote issues, and we're looking into other ways that we can increase cougar take. We discussed that with the group a little bit, and I know that's a huge concern, so Josh and I are looking into how we can do that for the unit.
Why aren't we talking about the Henry Mountains in the southern unit and the other premium unit? Is that not?
It's not in the southern region.
Part of the southeastern region.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It should be in the southern. On these population objectives, why do we even have a population objective, and what is it that we look at to determine that number?
And that's kind of a difficult one, but in Utah State Code, we are required to have a population objective for big game animals, for deer and elk specifically. We have to have a population objective. Sometimes I think when those numbers were set, you know, we do our best to set them at the right level, but every year, every few years, we're learning a little bit more, watching, you know, if we're carrying a certain number of animals and we're still not seeing habitat degradation or heavy use, you know, it may be reasonable to increase that.
Okay, and then what's carrying capacity? Where does that term fit into this formula?
And I think a lot of things go into that because you've got different parameters. We've got depredation issues, social issues that come into it, or just the habitat issues.
Wouldn't that be a better number than carrying capacity? An objective.
And that's what we try to hit on. And that's what we try to hit on when we choose our population objective. We try to make that match with the carrying capacity for the unit.
Good. Okay, next question. The Zion unit. You know, the only thing that separates the Zion unit from the Ponsagon, and the similarities are immense. They're just almost identical terrain, everything. We have done a fence. We have done water. We have done, 60,000 acres of improvement. We're not growing any deer over there. What's going on? I look at the Zion, which is the only thing that divides those two units is Highway 89. And we are growing deer. I think Jason needs to come on over there to the Ponsagon and tickle some of them does or something. We've got to get some deer growing over there. I mean, we've gone 4 years without increasing one deer on the Ponsagon in our...
On the Ponsagon or the Zion?
No, the Ponsagon. Oh. But the Zion is a sister. And
gotcha.
We're putting 3,032 hunters out there on this Zion unit and have been hunting the heck out of it every year. And it's just growing like a rose. And the Ponsagon's over there doing nothing. And we've done everything to that unit that I think we can possibly do, you know, to spur an increase in population. I know we were holding it down, and you've even lifted that for us to where we can put 6,500 deer over there again. Why is it in the models? What can possibly put 15,000 deer on one side of the highway, 52,000 or 5,200 on the other, when they're just so similar in stature or the topography and the oak belt and everything else? How can we be hunting and doing all this stuff, very little improvement. Have 15,000 deer on one, and one that we've done everything to grow deer, we haven't grown a deer over there.
And
could possibly...
And that's a good question, Sam. You know, I don't know if there's some fine...
Not the lack of trying.
Yeah,
I understand. I know what projects we've done.
If there's
how hard we've worked.
A little more water on the Zion, I don't know, because I know how hard we've worked on the Ponsagon and put so much money into it. Kevin, are you going to take a stab at that?
I was just going to ask if Josh or Jason, any insight there that you want to add? We made him travel here. We got to get him up to the mic.
But before you get up there, I've hunted the Zion all of my life in the last 12 years consistently, and I can't tell you that I won more deer over there than there was 12 years ago. And honestly, I think there are less, but I don't know if this is modeling or if Kolob or somewhere over there where I don't go on those private land holdings up there, which are immense during that migration and the deer hunt. That oak belt and that area there is where the deer are during that migration and when we hold the hunts. So I know a lot of deer stay up there. But I'm baffled with this.
I think there's possibly two differences between the Zion and the Ponsagon. One, the topography is the same. It's, you know, it's really similar. The Zion does have a lot more water. I think you'd probably agree that there is quite a bit more water on the Zion, at least on the summer range, than there is on the Ponsagon. Another thing would be the buck to doe ratio on the Zion. We've been keeping that, you know, in that 20 range, and it's more than twice that on the Ponsagon. And when you've got more bucks and less does, you less potential for growth.
I buy into that and understand the biology, and I used to argue with Enos quite a bit about how that works. But there's just got to be
something
there that does it make any sense to you, Jason? You've got two units sitting that. Now, you say water. That's a stretch, if you ask me, because we got plenty of water on the Ponsagon. We've developed all kinds of water on the Ponsagon. And I just can't help but think that... that there is something not right in all that. I know, and the DCIs, let me bring that up again, because I noticed that they did do a DCI in 2013 and that we have actually, the habitat has improved on the Ponsagon. You list two areas that are listed as poor. And one of those, of course, is the Nephi pasture, which hasn't been manipulated anyway. And the Mustang area, the same year they did the DCI, they went in and clear cut all of that area around Mustang, so that has been done on there. And gosh, I don't know, Josh, I don't want to just pick on Jason, but I just hope we really have 15,000. That is great.
The thing that gives me confidence in that 15,000 is the number of bucks that we consistently harvest over the last few years. To consistently harvest that many and to maintain that buck-to-doe ratio, we've got to have that large population to sustain that kind of harvest.
Well, so we've got a pretty good buck-to-doe ratio on the Ponsagon, too.
Yeah.
And then you're saying it's too high, right?
Well, it's managed for...
I understand that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Just
baffled.
Know what?
One thing that I'm thinking about talking about the Ponsagon.
Donnie, come up here.
State your name. Awesome. We get you on the record.
Donnie Hunter. This is just personal. I'm concerned about that Ponsagon too. There could be a lot more opportunity for sportsmen there, and originally we wanted that to happen. That Ponsagon gets used a lot. Those deer get bothered a lot. They get bothered all year by trophy hunters watching them, taking pictures of them, around them all the time. But not only you. There's
a
lot of that.
I see you out there when I'm there.
I'm a problem too. We like to look at them, but those deer... Humans are around them, I think, too much. We have a lot of people out there looking for those big horns. I think that might be a little bit of why those deer are stagnant and coming back. I don't know, but just a thought.
Those are some good ideas, but I can tell you I shed hunt every year. I haven't found any dead deer anywhere. I still see 60 does per 100 fawns. See you out there every year, and there are a lot of people out there that all usually turns off right after the rut, and they're usually, it's pretty stable until we start getting into the spring areas where we, you know, start doing a little antler hunting and things that way. So, you know, we're back out in there, but that's kind of true. But I think you've got something there.
Yep. One more thing. I'd like to commend the division for their recommendations. We're going in the right direction.
Yep.
Thank you.
No.
Can I say something about just the population of people?
It's up to Dave. I don't know where we're at with the comment period. He's running the meeting. Sam, all I was going to say is one thing I can think of is the increased recreation that we have in the summer range. I mean, up on top of there now, there's a lot of recreation that I've seen a big increase, and that's right in some of our fawning ground is up there on the Tropic Reservoir and up on that end. So there's a big increase up there in those people, and it's similar to the Henrys. You know, the Henrys aren't really growing a big objective of deer. Their population objective, it's you know, they're not growing a lot of fawns, and it's the same kind of thing. If you have a lot of bucks on the range, then it's not going to allow that. There's a lot of mouths to feed out there with having that many more bucks, so that's why I could see.
So do we blame the elk at all?
What's that?
Do we blame the elk at all?
Anyway, that's what I can think of.
Something like that.
Let me wrap this.
Taylor, hold on just a minute. We'd love to have you come up. We can do it in the format that we have. We have a comment card from you. And if it's a question, we have a question time. So we do want to hear from you. So.
Let me just have a closing comment on the Ponsagunt. We know what a gem, you know, as a division the Ponsagunt is, and we want to maximize it just like you do, Sam. Like you mentioned, we're trying everything, and we'll continue to try everything. The population isn't growing, but as you stated yourself, it's not for a lack of trying, and maybe there's something out there that we haven't figured out yet, but we'll keep trying. And so whether you're here or not, we'll keep trying.
Okay, we have a question down here from Cordell.
Yeah, what kind of an impact does that Arizona hunt, late Arizona hunt, have on the Ponsagunt deer?
Josh, I'll turn this one to you.
Well, it's hard to know how many deer they're actually killing that are, say, Utah deer living in Utah in the summertime. But in talking with some of the Arizona biologists and that, they get a lot of harvest. We figure we could be losing up to $100 a year. They get killed after they cross and go that way. So that's also something that, you know, could limit some of those things. But yeah, that's definitely an impact on it as well. So.
Okay, thanks.
Actually, they have opened a new unit just to address those deer in Arizona, and there's over 235 permits issued in the late hunt for those deer that migrate down there. So I bet we lose a lot more than $50 down there.
Yeah, we estimate about 100, because not all of those will be Utah deer per se, but about 100 could be that.
Isn't there a new unit that just opened 340 permits?
Sorry, what's that?
In Arizona, that new unit that they just opened up, isn't it 340 permits?
I don't know.
I read that somewhere, that it was like 340 permits, additional permits, on a separate hunt.
What it is there's 235 permits just on the 12B West, they call it. I think that came about around 2005 is when they initiated that. If you count the other units they migrate in, there's 500 on the 12B on the early hunt, which is after our rifle hunt. It's in November. They have another 135 on the 12B late hunt, 60 on the 13A, and 70 on the 13B early and late hunts. So there's probably close to 700-800 deer that have the possibility of getting taken on those hunts.
Yeah, and we've actually this year we started with our new modeling. We've actually started adding 100 of those deer, that a mortality of 100 extra deer on top of that this year to that model. So it's getting us a better idea. So.
Thank you. Any more questions from the rack? Dale?
On the debt, what's the limiting factor that keeps us at 2,700 on that? I mean, Monroe and that mountain are similar in your acreages in summer and winter. Range are a little bit different, but we're at 7,500 on Monroe. Why are we so low for an objective on Dutton?
And I don't know if it's just a little less water on that unit, Josh. Sorry, buddy.
I don't know why you want that.
Yeah. I'll just sit here. I'm not exactly sure, Dale, why that is. It's just a number that we've kind of set. And with our models, it's kind of showing with that. But some of that could be habitat issues and water with that in there. A lot of it's terrain, too. It's you know, a pretty rocky, nasty mountain. So it's not quite as nice as the Monroe and stuff to grow a lot of good deer, and that fire may have had impact on that as well with the amount of the change in some of that habitat there. So that's the only thing I can think of.
Okay, Mac.
Question. I noticed in the information you sent us that on Mount Dutton, the year-round percent of private land for habitat's 59%. Is there a landowner association down there, or can they be one?
Not for general season deer. You can only have landowners association for limited entry animals, whether it's pronghorn, elk, or deer. It has to be a limited entry rather than a general season.
And Mac,
what about a CWMU?
If someone had for deer, they'd have to have over 5,000 contiguous acres for a deer CWMU. I'm not sure if there's 5,000 contiguous of private.
And Mac, there is a landowners association for the pronghorn because it is limited entry on that unit.
Okay. Any other questions from the rack? Okay, so
really, really easy one. This deer management plan. When we voted and accepted that plan, we do have the ability to tweak that if the board chooses to do it. Is that true?
The statewide plan or unit plans?
The statewide plan.
I believe that the board does have that latitude to change things, but typically once they pass something, they've been trying to stick to it for the five-year duration, but plans are changed.
So let me clarify that. The board can do that, but the division, you know, once the board passes that, we're stuck to those sideboards. So we're going to make recommendations that are consistent with that statewide plan, and that's what you're seeing here. But the board at times, you know, does tweak things. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? I have one question for you, Teresa. This is more on the format of the public input and the meetings that you had. Now that you've gone through the southern region, would you envision doing things different down the road or next year when you have one of the other regions, or how do you feel your input was and the availability for the public to really comment?
It's difficult to get public comment, whatever forum you use. The majority of the other regions don't even have public meetings. They'll call some constituents. So I felt it was important to at least have some public meetings so we could gather that input. It's never as much as I would like to see, but I think the southern region is doing more than some regions throughout the state.
Would you see any value to have like an annual meeting or a group of interested parties that could meet yearly and talk about a specific unit and have the DWR there and all the stakeholders there, like the ranchers and the sportsmen? And to what, well, I guess where I'm going was, you know, as RAC, a few months ago, we voted to make some changes on the deer management plan. and a lot of those changes you've made, and I accommodate you for that. But when we went to the board level, I think there was, they said, oh, no, let's address these particular items when we do the individual unit plans. And so we envisioned that maybe we'd have to go and talk those things up and have a forum where we could talk and promote some ideas and maybe make some changes. And we didn't see that particular thing happen at the open houses. However, the suggestions that you made, the changes that you made have been, you know, right in line with a lot of the ideas that we had. So, I mean, that's great. But I just wonder if there's a value or something that we could promote to try to get groups together that met once a year that was concerned about Panguitch Lake or concerned about the Pine Valley. I know there is a group right now that's the Pine Valley group, and you know these units, and see how we could maybe help with the public input process.
Dave, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to answer that because it's a statewide issue rather than just specific to the southern region. And there's the division's philosophy on these kind of groups is groups for public input, they're great. And when we put together an advisory committee, we try to write them a charter. And once they're done with their, you know, with the task we ask them to do, then the group actually goes away. The one exception to that is the Henry Mountains Bison Committee. That one is still somewhat intact. It doesn't quite serve the same function it did in the past, but it's used to do kind of what you've talked about. I guess what we would look at is on a statewide basis is if there are units where there are overriding concerns and there's real sticky issues that we need a committee to go through that kind of effort to deal with, you know, that would certainly be very helpful. I think that Teresa and, you know, Kevin's staff down here did an excellent job, even though the open houses, you know, may not have appeared to accomplish the same thing. We've actually all been to a training called Public Politics and Problems that talks about the different public input methods, and public open houses are actually a very good tool to use to do that, because what it does is it puts the biologists one-on-one or one-on, you know, they typically end up one-on about six, you know, with the people chiming in, and you get dialogue, and people are able to talk to each other rather than in a committee. A lot of times you get grandstanding, you know, of course, here at the RAC meeting, and I'm talking way too long, so I'm sorry, but I actually think it worked out great. And I think that, you know, after she had these meetings, she came back, met with us in Salt Lake, and we said, you know, it's what the public wants, and so that's why you're seeing some of these changes tonight. So I would just say to you that I actually think that the system worked, and you know, but on big issues, we'll look at that one as needed.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with you. I think the recommendations that come back with have been spot on, personally, but it just seemed like the process was maybe different than what we envisioned, and so yeah. It's probably an expectation type of thing, mm-hmm. more than anything.
Sometimes change is good.
Let me add to the other part of your comment there, Dave, a little bit. I think these, when you have groups that start from kind of a grassroots level, like Friends of the Ponsagunt did, like the Pine Valley group, I think they actually do better if they're organized. Not if we don't organize them, if there's a group of folks that come together and organize that, you'll never see us deny, or if we're invited to come visit with a group like that, we will always engage. But I think that those groups work better if they come out of kind of a grassroots type of an effort where there's a group of people that are highly concerned and they organize themselves. And then if they invite us to come and participate, we'll never turn down that opportunity.
Well, and I guess I've kind of been a champion of that type of scenario. Like, I was really encouraged the Pine Valley guys to get together. I've tried to encourage groups in some other regions to get together, and if there's value there, then I would continue to try to do that. And more than anything, I want to try to build relationships between sportsmen and ranchers and to address real issues. And if there's value there, then I'd continue to pursue that. But if I'm wasting my time, then I don't know that I'd necessarily want to do that.
I would say there's probably not value everywhere, but there certainly is in some places.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions? Okay, we'll turn questions over to the public. We do have a lot of comment cards, so if you just keep your comments to questions right now, and then we'll call you up one at a time with your comments. So state your name.
Greg McGregor, Santa Clara, Utah. Just to follow up on that, about the groups, one thing that disappointed us a little bit in the Pine Valley group is the fact that we had organized a group, and then we invited some of the other officials. We invited BLM, we invited Forest Service to join with us and be part of that group. Negative comment we got back from, especially the BLM, is they felt like if the division wasn't there in person to monitor and to give input, that they weren't going to participate themselves either. And that was kind of a negative thing we had. Now, I won't go any further with that. I have two questions. A couple of them have a couple sub-questions to them. The largest unit in the southern region, I believe, is the Southwest Desert, correct? And it has the lowest population of deer. Can we? That's kind of like Sands conundrum up there. What can we attribute that to?
And that's a really, if Jason wants to add anything, he sure can, but that's very water limited. I think the habitat and water limited, there's not a lot of high elevation, lush aspen on it. It's just a lower elevation, lower population.
That was my next question. Yep. That was my next question.
Yes.
My next question is, the horses seem to do just fine, and is our state and is our division doing anything to lobby with the powers to be to get those horses out of there? Are we contributing anything?
Hey, before you sit down, I want to say something. Yeah, at the statewide level, we're engaged on the horse issue consistently.
Yeah. Okay.
Greg, on Friends of the Potsgunt, we organized that. We have never even had a meeting where we did not have the unit biologist present. The department has been worked with us very well on that stuff. If you've got a unit and a concern, the department should definitely have their biologist there for you.
I agree, but I thought it was a little odd that the BLM would decline if we didn't have Jason or somebody there to give input that way. The other question I have is, and I went through almost unit by unit the plan for the southern region, and I was impressed. And one of the things that I did find, though, is that when the predator management plan kicks in based on objectives, there's a question here, or not a question, it says, if the population estimate is less than 90% of the objective and the fawn-to-doe ratio drops below 70% for two of the last 3 years, or if the fawn survival rate drops below 50% for 1 year, then the predator management plan kicks in for coyotes. Okay? Conversely, if the population management is less than 90% of objective, and the doe survival rate, says doe survival rate rather than fawn survival rate, drops below 85% for two of the last 3 years, or below 80% for 1 year, then the plan kicks in for kitty cats. Correct?
I believe that's correct. I don't
know. Yes, that's what it says.
Great.
Okay. What is the difference? Why would one be predicated on fawn survival and the other predicated on doe survival? Just FYI, that's all.
And I think that lions can target adult animals more, and coyotes certainly have more of an impact on our fawns. Yeah. So currently, I believe the Southwest Desert and the Pontagon are the only two in our region right now that we've got contracts with predator management plans.
That's great.
And it's certainly not cut and dry, but in general, coyotes have a larger impact on fawns, and lions have a larger impact on adult survival. So that's why we use an adult trigger for lions and a reproductive or fawn trigger for coyotes. Yeah.
Dave, if it's okay, I'd just like to add a comment. We're kind of at an awkward stage right now. The Wildlife Board asked us to go back and look at the Cougar Plan and simplify it. And these predator management guidelines that the Southern Region put into their unit plans stand as they are right now, but they are going to be tweaked in a minor manner. And so I'm just warning you that, you know, the next you know, I don't know when we're going to bring it out, but I think it's in August that they will look just a little bit different. But sure. Same concept.
Thank you. I think you did a good job answering the questions. Thank you. Any more questions from the public?
Hi, I'm Jason Aiken from Cedar City, representing myself. On the units that you've got crowding, you talked about splitting up the allocation more towards archery and muzzleloader. What about what's the opportunity or what's the ability to maybe look at splitting the rifle hunt and doing two separate rifle hunts over a 2 week or 3 week period instead of having all those rifle hunters on the unit at the same time?
And I would have to review the statewide plan to see. We do have the option of course to adjust the percentages. Bill, does it say anything in the statewide plan about an additional rifle hunt?
I'm not sure.
I mean, we've discussed that 5 years ago.
Yeah, let me comment on that a little bit, Teresa. We've had an idea in place for a long time that's pretty well fleshed out, changing the hunt structure around. We haven't implemented that yet. We were really close at the same time that we did the unit. We changed to unit by unit. But we felt it scared us a little bit to add too much change at one time, to go unit by unit and change the hunt structure. But there's an idea out there, and maybe Bill, maybe it's time to bring it out as an informational item again and back through the racks. One of the things that hunt structure does is it does separate into two different deer hunts, but it also means that you could hunt deer and elk at the same time, which is another really appealing part of that hunt structure for some people. And we do have a pretty well thought out plan. We just haven't pulled the trigger on it yet because we wanted to let this idea of the unit by unit stuff kind of settle in and let people get used to that before we added another big change.
Let me preface what I'm saying by telling you I may be wrong. Okay. But I don't believe that the statewide plan really restricts us on this, other than it's not really a strategy that we fleshed out. However, Steve just brought up a good point to me. Right now we're going to start taking out the elk plan and revising it, and those are certainly issues, you know, what Kevin just talked about, that we will talk about with the elk committee. You know, this year one thing we're tackling in the next round of racks is I guess it's going to be later in the fall, we're going to be looking at primitive weapons, looking at, you know, magnified scopes on muzzleloaders and crossbows and things like that. So that's kind of what's in the queue right now, but I think that once the elk committee's done, that might be the time to start looking at our hunt structure again.
Okay, thank you. Additional questions? Okay.
Russell Todd. I'm part of Friends for Pine Valley. One question I had, if I remember right, your current population estimate for Zion is 15,000 and 13,500 for Pine Valley, but you're allocating 700 more tags for Pine Valley than Zion. I was just trying to figure out why you would give more tags for a unit that has less population on it. If I remember right.
Yeah, I think you are right. Well, Teresa's looking at that. The simple answer to that is all the private land on the Zion.
Okay.
We don't have as many places we can put people on the Zion as we're not restricted with private land on the Pine Valley. If we could put more, if we had the room to put more hunters on the Zion, we would.
Okay.
But we just don't have the room because we're restricted to just the public land. Okay. A lot of the private land's not available.
That makes sense. I was just hoping it wasn't a popularity thing, because Pine Valley is more accessible and easier to hunt.
No, it's just the places we have to put hunters. Jason?
Right on.
Okay. Right on. Thank you.
I've just heard a couple things.
State your name, Scott.
Oh, I'm sorry. Scott Christensen. Just representing myself with a question. I think the first time I'd heard the comment that you had referred to about a higher buck to doe ratio oftentimes is leading to a lower fawn production.
And that's kind of new to me. I've been around a while, but I've never heard that. So are we growing deer at a faster rate on our 15 to 17 buck units than we are at our limited entry unit?
If you are at carrying capacity, it's going to have more of an impact. So this is information that you're familiar with, Dr. McMillan,
right,
with BYU. And this is a study out of Colorado. I can find it for you if you're interested in it. But it does say there's some correlations. So as you're increasing your buck-to-doe ratio, I mean, and if you're closer to your carrying capacity, then you're going to start affecting your production.
And so I guess the question is, what units are we worried about then specifically that our buck-to-doe ratio would start to impact our fawn production? Because it seems I'm struggling with the whole. I know bucks don't have fawns, and now we're finding out that bucks kill fawns, but. Kind of.
Don't kill, but limit production is what it comes down to.
And
I can see if we're at carrying capacity, mm-hmm. but we already established, I thought earlier tonight, that we really don't know what our carrying capacity
is. Yeah, that's a very difficult one to see. So we're trying to make sure our population, we'd love in a perfect world for our population objective to align with K. So we know that, but oftentimes it doesn't because there's so many other aspects involved in the carrying capacity. I mean, there's a lot of social aspects that we need to recognize.
Absolutely.
As well.
So I just worry it's kind of the new, we can attach to that, and that's why we're not growing.
No, that's just another tidbit of information that, you know, we just need to be cognizant of.
The best way to get at carrying capacity is to let the animals tell you.
Sure.
And the best way to let the animals tell you is through that body condition index that we're doing. And that's why when we look at the Monroe right now and our body condition index is low, that's probably the best indication that right now we're close to carrying capacity on the Monroe, because we're seeing deer that were at one body condition drop. Mm-hmm. And there's not many other things you can attribute that to besides habitat.
Sure. I guess I see it as a different correlation than a more buck population, but maybe. Well,
and this is pretty new research. We need to look into it more ourselves.
And that's just one of the many aspects that I listed about the Monroe. I mean, with the poor body condition, we also recognize that it may be a summer range thing. It may be precipitation for the last few years, too. I've had those discussions, I believe, with you. So there's a lot of different factors going on. Vance has been working with the federal land management agencies and looking at a few areas to see if we've got some heavy habitat use. So it's all coming into effect. But also we're recognizing that production is still maintaining on the Monroe. If we start seeing that drop off in you know, with the poor body condition, then that's an even bigger indicator that we're probably reaching K.
Well, and I think the Monroe's a great unit.
Absolutely.
We've done so many studies there, it just needs to continue. So.
Thank you. Okay, we do have a number of comment cards. If you're representing a group, we'll let you take 5 minutes. If you're representing yourself, you have 3 minutes. And we'll start going through these. We start off with Bryce first, and then Scott Christensen.
Can I use that one? Can I use that?
Absolutely, you can go on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bryce Pilling, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We'd like to say that we support the division's recommendation.
Thank you. After Scott, we have Taylor Albrecht.
More than anything, I want to commend the division on seeing how this plan came together. We lost the Thousand Lake as a limited entry. I was excited to see that we're trying to expand and put some of that limited entry opportunity back, with including the Pavant. I think that was a great move. My biggest comment was that I appreciate the division came not only once but twice to the Richfield, Wayne County area to meet with the general public. In both those meetings, we kind of set some questions and appealed to the division to increase the buck to doe ratio. We understood when we left that the sideboards were in place, but under an overwhelming consensus in those groups, the Boulder and the Monroe, was to increase those from a 15 to 17 to an 18 to 20. We would hope the RAC would recognize that that was the majority of the consensus of the group in all three meetings that were held.
You're talking about the five units that are 17 to 18 right now, or 15 to 17?
Just the Boulder and Monroe. Boulder and Monroe. That's what came out of our town hall meetings. Again, that was just from there, and I believe the comment cards showed that. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Not up in the meeting.
Taylor, please, you know, take the time you need. We cut you off before, so if you'd like to comment on the Poncegon or anything, please do so.
All right. Taylor Albrecht, I'm just representing myself. To go back to kind of like what Sam was saying, and Donnie brought it up, that more people are out viewing the deer on the Poncegon and stuff. I work for Garcane Energy over there, and during the summer months, to go back to what you were saying mostly, Donnie, about more people viewing, working with them, we got more people on the Cedar Mountain during the month from June to August than we've got in the rest of all of Kane County. There's more private property up there than a lot of the units, and so I don't really think that's a determining factor on why Zion is growing more deer faster than, but that's besides the point now. But and then my other comment, just like Scott said at these town hall meetings, I'd like to see the Monroe also go to 18 to 20 bucks for 100 does. So
thank you. Paul Niemeyer, followed by Kaylin Lemon.
I'm Paul Niemeyer, representing the Sevier Wayne County chapter of Sportsman, Fish, and Wildlife. The first thing, I guess, that I would like to do is thank the DWR for the amount of effort going into this. It is unbelievable, the hours that they've spent. Also, I would like to say that as sportsmen, we have spent a lot of hours. Town hall meetings, SFW, board meetings. You know, we come into this not just to blueprint the DWR. We do concur with the recommendations that they have made. These are thought out, they're worked out. There went a lot of stuff both from the public and the DWR into this. So we do concur with their recommendations. As a personal note, not representing anybody except myself, I would like to see that Monroe. I was at the same town hall meetings that Scott and these other guys were, and people would like to see that Monroe and Boulder go up with the other units and be more consistent through the whole area. But I think it's a great job DWR has done on these, and we should certainly support them.
Thank you. After Kaylin, we have Greg McGregor.
I guess I better add in there, too, that I'm super happy with all the proposals and everything. You guys are doing a great job. And, you know, obviously you're listening to what the public and the sportsmen and, you know, landowners, everybody together, you know, are looking for with this. So commend you with that. I'm here representing just the local sportsmen in both Millard and Juab County. I do a lot with the sportsman group, you know, SFW, but also spent a lot of time personally, you know, with a lot of the different groups and everything around. For our Oak Creeks and Pavant boundary change there, that's been something that's, you know, that's been on, I mean, that's been on the board for a long time. I believe currently, if I'm not mistaken, the Oak Creeks limited entry unit is the only unit in the state that holds a fence line boundary for the majority of the unit. that is the Forest Service. Right now, there's not even an existing fence line that is up. Due to the fire, I believe 90%+ of that fence line, which is our manageable boundary, is burned into dust. So right now, there's no actual, you know, way for us to manage this unit for any kind of a trophy quality or for limited entry. So it really needs some kind of a reform. We're in huge support of exactly how this is drawn up. This has took a lot of hours, a lot of effort. And it actually, it appeals to both, you know, sportsmen and the landowners and everything, the way that this has been drawn up. This has, you know, been great from, you know, from Riley taking care of it. I just wanted to let everybody know, you know, how much time this has took, how passionate we are about seeing this change take place, and especially for the resource, you know, the deer on the unit. It's the best thing that could ever possibly happen for us right now. A few more steps, you know, down the line to keep the quality there that we'd all like, but this is the first step in the right direction, no doubt. Anyway, combining the general units, I think that's actually appealed as much to the landowners as it has to the, you know, to the public, as far as taking that Pavant and stretching it out to the west there for that. So felt like everybody should know that. That's all I got.
Thank you. Okay, Kevin.
Kalen, and this is a comment to Kalen and to Bryce. That live over in that area, getting that landowners association in place is going to be really key to being for this proposal to be successful. So Riley's going to continue to need the support of the sportsmen as he reaches out to the landowners to get that landowners association in place. So please don't walk away from it now. I don't think you intend to, but getting that landowners association organized is going to be a huge key to this proposal being successful.
Can I ask him just a real quick?
So, Intel, you want the recommendation, you agree with exactly what they've got proposed here on that you're not looking for any change.
Exactly that. And just to comment back to you there, Kevin, on the, you know, on the landowner stuff, before they changed the elk plan and turned this to a general unit for elk, you know, there always wasn't a landowner association that's been set up for years, you know, for the elk hunts, but never for the deer. So it's a pretty easy form to actually get, you know, everyone that was on that elk, you know, plan there right onto the deer and moving forward. I know Riley's dealt a lot more, you know, recently with the landowners on the unit. Bryce and I have both spent a tremendous amount of time personally, you know, and as well as with the group, you know, kind of making the landowners aware. I personally have family, you know, on that unit right there on two different sides that have land that are part of the landowner association, you know, previous with the elk. There is a lot of support on it. There's very few that have been against it. But I believe with the way that Riley's been handling this, with the way that, you know, the state, you know, yourself involved has been handling this, there's a lot more support coming from it. You know, there's a lot of people that are coming on and being very supportive of it now, and as far as the landowners' side there.
Thank you. Okay, we have Greg McGregor, and then our last one is Jason Aiken.
First of all, Greg McGregor, Santa Clara, Utah. I'm here in part for the Southern Chapter of Safari Club International and also part of the Partners for Pine Valley group. I would like to throw a shout-out to Paul Niemeyer. He's a former member of this, also the former chair and also former member of the Wildlife Board, and he's still active and throwing his voice around, and I think that's really cool. Thanks, Paul. Also, as we went through the recommendations, we were really thrilled with the amount of work that has gone into this. The division is to be complimented. It's a good amount of work, and it's precise, and it's got valuable information in it, and you're to be complimented on that. The one thing that we would like to reiterate as sportsman groups is that an emphasis be continued to be placed on the predator management plans for all the units, not just the Southwest Desert and the Pine Valley. We think that's key. If we're ever to get our deer herd back, we have got to really focus on those predators and not passively. So like if it kicks into the plan, we can't say, okay, we're going to kill one more cat. We got to hit it aggressively. We got to kick their butts, and we got to get our deer back, because that's the bread and butter of this division, of our state, all of our hunts in this state. And that's what our recommendation would be. Thanks very much for members of the RAC for being here and for hearing us out. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm Jason Aiken, representing Iron County Chapter, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We
we're very pleased with the recommendations that the division has brought to us today. We're excited about the Panguitch Lake unit in Iron County, especially about that buck-to-doe ratio going up, and then the Panguitch Lake and Zion, the population objectives being increased. We're excited to see that. So thanks for the division and the RAC for hearing us out. We appreciate your hard work.
Thank you. That closes our comments portion. We appreciate all your comments. We appreciate you being here tonight. There's been some very good discussion and comments that you brought forth. We'll turn the time over to the RAC members for comments now. Dale.
Question on Monroe. I spent a lot of time there. It's one of my favorite units, if not my favorite. There's a lot of comment to raise that from the 18 to 20. Go over one more time for me what the detrimental effects of that could be. I mean, we're finally seeing that unit rebound. I don't want to vote to raise something if it's going to have a detrimental effect. If it's going to have a minimal effect, then I mean, kind of tell me what I guess the consequences of that could be.
Sure. Yeah, you know, there's not a big difference between the 15 to 17 and the 18 to 20. I think the only negative part of that is you'll have fewer hunters getting the opportunity to hunt every year. Probably if we move to the 18 to 20 category, a couple hundred hunters a year, somewhere in that vicinity. And so I think that's why I recommended that it stay the same, is just to I guess I'm the only, it's Monroe's the only unit in the southern region that's not 18 to 20 this year. But that's why, in my mind, really that's the only negative effect. You're not going to really see a big difference in reproduction or anything with that small increase of bucks on the landscape. And so that's really it. We're there now. We're at 22 bucks per 100 does. The hunting's great. Success rates are through the roof on it. So.
Does the history of that unit play into it at all, Vance? So there was a time when we really struggled to get the buck-to-doe ratio up.
Yeah. You know, Monroe's very accessible. We've heard that many times. And so that's why our success rates are so high, you know, over 66 or some percent success on the rifle hunt. And historically, it's really popular. We've had, I think, averaged in the 2000s, 2,500 hunters total between all the hunts there. And so it's a really popular spot, being popular and easy access. We've averaged 12 bucks per 100 doe during that time period. So we usually have low buck to doe ratios there because of the reasons I mentioned. So
Monroe is a really good example of how unit by unit management gives us the opportunity to address that, because now we can control the number of people on the Monroe, whereas when it was region wide we couldn't, and that's why buck to doe ratios were as low as they were.
Yep.
While you're there, could that be one of the reasons for the lower health, I guess, is the pressure, the accessibility, the, you know, are they, those deer getting pushed too much pressure from hunts or recreationists? Or,
you know, I think deer are really adaptable, and I don't think that's why we're seeing that. I think we're seeing lower body condition because of our springtime droughts of the last 2 years, and our populations, we've grown a couple thousand more deer on the unit, and we're not really seeing range damage yet, but hey, we're getting up there pretty close to really our long-term average on our population. I think Monroe, the population objective is at 7,500. If I look at the long-term average on that, that's pretty close to the average carrying capacity of the range. And so it's just something we're going to watch really close, watch the condition, watch the range real close over the next couple of years.
Thank you.
Oh, no. I just want to ask him a question, and then George Bill. I'm sorry. You're saying right now that it says 21.3 on the 3-year average, and you're at 22.2 on the Monroe right now, and that it is very difficult to get that average up. That almost sounds like a recommendation to raise that to 18 to 20, or at least that you would agree that it would be a good thing to do to keep it from getting it down there again.
Yeah, well, it's easy. It would be easy to raise it up there, and just as long as we understand the downside as far as opportunity goes, yeah, it wouldn't. I think a lot of, locally, we've heard today at our open houses that we held locally, the vast majority of the people were for raising the objective, the bucks.
Yes, sir.
I wish Kent Hersey was here, and again, I may be wrong, but I think I can shed a little bit of light on the question you asked, Dale. I believe that for every year of age, of the average age, you drop the or increase the objective, you have to decrease permits by around 6%. So we'd be looking at about an 18% reduction in permits, if I'm recalling right. The 6% is the thing that might be wrong. It might be 10, might be somewhere, but I seem to recall it. Kent said it was 6. But what, you know, Teresa and Kevin and, you know, the biologist came back and talked with us in Salt Lake about this issue, and we would prefer it stay at the 15 to 17 from the standpoint that we need to provide opportunity for citizens statewide. And we understand that the Monroe is a very important unit to people who live down here, just as Elk Ridge is very important to the people who live in Blanding. But, you know, it's a statewide issue, and the Monroe, with its accessibility and just the topography of it, it fits more in with the 15 to 17 bucks per 100 DOE units, and we are looking at trying to provide as much opportunity as we can. And as you can see, we're already at 21.7 bucks per 100 DOE, so it's, you know, obviously we're doing well there.
Well, didn't we say that the deer are in poor condition on the Monroe? Isn't that the unit we're talking about that
right.
was going on? Well, it sounds like they need a break. If
like
we
a
had less 100.
I know, no. It's actually the exact opposite, Sam. We need to reduce the population if they're deer in poor condition.
Okay, can I
okay, but we don't.
Came out of that meeting. Is that okay? Is that acceptable?
No, we've closed the comment. Sorry.
Wow.
Okay. You'll be okay. Oh, I guess you could. Go ahead. Yeah,
I raised my hand. I learned that in school real early.
You do have to state your name, though.
Yep, Scott Christensen. Thank you, Kevin. Also, I need to comment that at that town hall meeting, it was discussed a lot to not cut opportunity, that we shift some of that efforts in changing up some of the 60-40 rules. And I would definitely think that needs to be taken into account with that unit if we do go to the 18 to 20. Personally, I don't want to see that unit cut opportunity either. I think we can still work through providing that opportunity and keep the same number of tags, but not necessarily all rifle tags. So.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any further comments, Brian?
I've tried really hard to keep my mouth shut today, just for Sam, because it was his going away present, so I kept it quiet. I kept it quiet just till now. You're welcome, Sam. I look at this, and I just for discussion's sake, for us guys up here on the rack, just as we sit here and think about it, you got 8 or 9 units at 18 per 20 bucks per 100 does, and then you got 4 units at 15 to 17. And I don't necessarily represent sportsmen at large here, but I know some of you do. And I'm just sitting here thinking, you start raising every unit in the southern part of the state to 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and I'm all for it. I got a lifetime license tag. I can hunt whatever I want, so it doesn't matter to me. But you start looking out at the public, you know, the majority of these guys here. And Claire, I've heard you say it before. You hate to see the opportunity go away. And I mean, I'm not necessarily close to the idea of 18 per 100, 18 per 20 on the Monroe. But, okay, so what do? You slam another 200 archery tags on there, and you're only going to kill 36 deer. You guys have heard me when I was on that side of the table. I'm not opposed to that, and I definitely would entertain a motion to keep opportunity up. You know, I mean, you put rifle hunters on there, they are extremely effective on that unit at killing deer. And I'm not opposed to that either. I'm just things to think about here as we're discussing this, guys.
Okay, thank you. Any more comments?
I also see we're killing 150 does on that unit.
One more,
Dale.
If we're already at objective, so we're really not going to lose any opportunity, really, at this point. I mean, we're there as far as the 18 to 20, we're there now. So, I mean, we could keep the permits the same as we had for this last year. We're not going to cut. We're there. The only time we would cut is if it dropped back down, I guess. Right. Am I wrong, I guess? Is that...
This year we actually increased permits on the Monroe by 100 so we can come down to closer to our objective. So we're taking action. So at this rate, it might be the right amount of permits that it may be driving us downwards to meet our current objective, but we have increased it.
Okay. Kevin had a comment.
Do you want to go ahead and summarize?
Okay, let me summarize some of the comments that we've heard on this. From SFW, we've heard that they support the DWR's recommendations as presented. From the local public in the Richfield area, we heard that they would support or encourage us to raise the buck to doe ratio from 18 to 20. We've heard a number of comments regarding that. We've also heard comments regarding the predator management plan and that we continue to focus on that when needed. Is there anything I've missed, Kevin? The other comment that I wanted to make was, if you recall, when they presented the deer management plan to us, the southern region voted and passed that we raise all the buck-to-doe ratios for the southern region to 18 to 20. And that was just a few months ago. And so now is our opportunity to bring that up again and take care of that now. Sam?
Yeah, I'm really excited in what we've done and the fact that we're raising all of these. And one thing that would really have made this an awful lot easier for me is going through and reading all these plans and trying to keep track of the changes you made, because you didn't really note them as changes. If you could put something like that in that packet at the front like you do the recommendations, I think you'd save me a whole lot of frustration. On that, you got a pound of flesh. But the one big concern I have is all these gentlemen, all these people that are here to comment, you know, and we vote as a RAC on any one of the recommendations or changes or amendments or whatever, and then just after this last RAC, we made a recommendation that we only have three of those late hunts. It didn't even get represented. Now, there's something wrong there. I don't know why it wasn't addressed.
It was addressed. It just wasn't. It was as part of the discussion. It was addressed, but those making the motion didn't make a motion to.
Okay, it wasn't addressed. So it, I feel better already.
So they see.
Steve, you're off of it.
The board sees all the minutes from the rack, so they see that. And when we go over our motions, we summarize all the motions. It was addressed that was a motion that came from the southern rack. What we meant was, is, you know, they have the opportunity to see if that's something that they want to bring up in their motion. And so nobody made a motion to bring that up, and so it wasn't addressed in that manner. But it was addressed on our end. We're not definitely not ignoring any of the recommendations that come from the southern region.
Okay, I guess my heartfelt emotion on this is that when you have a southern region and a unanimous RAC vote on something, that it should carry a little more weight with the board than we normally see on this. And I know we've discussed this before. Yeah, a lot of people come out to, you know, to get this and to get these recommendations and present it to the board, and it just should carry enough weight that, you know, something like that, area specific, and the RAC does it, that we should be able to get it through.
Well, I think we saw that this last time. I mean, all the recommendations that were passed came directly from the Southern RAC. There's been times that I've been discouraged as well, that we've sent recommendations up and they weren't felt, you know, the same way we did when it went up there. But this last time, I mean, it almost went exactly the way with just a few exceptions. They really looked at the Southern RAC, and also those that came to comment, there was a lot of support. So I guess my comment there would be is the next time we feel real strongly about something, and it's only the Southern RAC that feels that strong, we need to carry that same number of comments and people from the audience, from the public, to be up there as well. Because it's hard for just the chairman to carry that forward when we don't have all the public support. But with this last time, we had, you know, we filled the room with people from Southern Utah, and that's why it went the way it did.
Okay, just apologize maybe to you if that sounded a little rancor.
No.
But and here again with this that Trace has shown us here, we had something like that where you could see that all these changes until Kevin brought it to my attention, and I was looking at the data that I had on what the recommendations and so on were made on that other meeting. I made the assumption that this stuff just didn't, and the way, when you talked about the meeting, the way it was addressed, that they didn't even look at it. But I'm really happy with what's happened.
Okay. Do we have any further comments before we entertain a motion?
I just want to say that I've noticed in the last 4 years, I've noticed an increased support from the Wildlife Board with stuff that's come from the RAC system statewide. I've noticed, and I appreciate it, and I know the general public does too, because, you know, 4 or 5 years ago it was the board just going to do whatever it wants, and now there's been some changes made, and I think it's beginning to work a lot better. And I just wanted to thank the board for paying attention to all the RACs, not just the Southern RAC, because I've noticed a difference as I read the minutes and I listen to the board meetings. So I just wanted to state that, because I have noticed a difference.
Thank you. Just to add to that, I guess I'm not sure where the motion's going to go and if it's going to pass. But if by chance we did vote and pass that we raise the buck-to-doe ratios for the Monroe and Boulder units, I'd encourage those of you in the audience that are here today to also be at the Wildlife Board meeting, because they need to hear from you there as well as here. So
Boulder's already recommended that that's the only change, to be the Monroe.
So it'll just be the Monroe. Okay. Thank you. All right, I'm ready to entertain a motion.
Let me say one thing before you do a motion, just based on what Bill said yesterday. I would suggest that you include in your motion that any changes that happen in the predator management plan in the future automatically be incorporated into these deer unit plans, so that we don't have deer unit plans that aren't lining up with the current predator management plan if there's changes coming in that. That way we just keep everything in sync.
Good idea. Okay, Dale. I'll make a motion that we approve the deer management plans as presented, with the exception we raise Monroe to 18 to 20. And we also include any changes to predator management plans
incorporate them into these deer management plans also.
Okay. We have a second from Mike. Any discussion on the motion? All those, okay, Brian.
Do we want to entertain the idea of shifting some of that 60-20-20 split to more primitive weapons, guys, or do we, I mean...
Brian, that's already in the plans for a couple of the units, and we'll be addressing that as with our recommendations coming forward.
Beautiful.
Okay, looks like we're ready to vote. All those in favor? Is that unanimous? Okay, that was easy. We have one other item of business, and we'll turn the time over to Kevin.
Let me finish typing here.
Oh.
Okay, the last agenda item is to... We need to have elections again for our RAC chair and vice chair. But before we get into that, we do have four members of the RAC, and I'm very pleased that all four of them are here tonight that are going to be leaving. We've got Claire Woodbury. This will be his last RAC meeting. I appreciate the time you've spent, Claire, and the voice that you've provided. Cordell, same applies. To you and you know, the time that you guys have spent. I think you guys have both, this is 8 years?
Nine.
That's a lot of time to put into this. You know, Mike, also appreciate the time that you've spent. That's a long ways to travel to most of our RAC meetings from Delta. I think you probably have as far to travel as anybody. And Sam, I don't think anybody's put as much time and effort into this in studying and coming prepared to the meetings as you have, and that's what makes this process work. And I appreciate the efforts that you gentlemen have made in making the process work. So thanks. So with that, we will have some new RAC members that will join, that will come on starting July 1st and be at our August meeting, which is August 4th. So they'll be hot off the press with the first meeting. I don't know who that is yet. We did have 17 people apply, which was fantastic. That gave me a lot of choices and a lot of opportunity, a lot of ability to make good choices, and I've sent my recommendations up to the director's office, and they'll be making decisions within the next couple of weeks, I would assume. So back to the item at hand, that we need to hold an election for chair and vice chair. Dave is eligible to serve as the RAC chair again if that's your preference as well. We do need, regardless of what happens with Dave, we do need to have a new vice chair because our current vice chair is Cordell, and he's going to be leaving. So with that being said, is there anybody? I'm open to nominations from the members of the RAC first for our chair. Okay, we have a nomination for Dave to continue as the RAC chair and a second. Anybody want to make any comments on that? Is everybody in favor of that? Okay, Dave, are you okay with that?
Yes.
Okay, so Dave will maintain for the next 2 years as the RAC chair. What about nominations for the vice chair? Okay, we have a nomination for Mike Worthen, and seconded by Brian. Is there any other nominations for vice chair? Mike, are you okay with that nomination? Okay, any other nominations for vice chair? Okay, this is going to be pretty easy then. Any objections? Let's just do it the other way. Any objections to Mike being vice chair? Okay, so for the next 2 years, Dave will continue as the chairman, and Mike will be the vice chair and serve as to run the meetings in any instances where Dave can't be present. And I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chairman. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Looks like the next meeting will be on the cougar hunt tables and permit numbers, bobcat permit numbers, and fee proposals. And with that, there's no other business, so we call this meeting adjourned.